I'm Byron Harris. Only one county in Texas has fewer people than Borden County, south of Lubbock. Borden County has only one town, Gale, Texas. Oddly, both the county and the town are named after Gale Borden, the inventor of condensed milk, who never even lived there. Gale, Texas has only 672 people. But Ana Arellanos wishes all of Texas could be a little bit more like the place that gave her a head start in life.
We had no grocery store. We had the gas station was a pump that you had a key. And I don't know if you know, if you've ever heard of these, but yeah, you have a key, and then the key for somehow keeps track of what you took out. And each person has their own key. And that was what we had. The only thing that was in the town was a school. I'm looking at all the skills that I learned from there and the confidence that I learned from that school. I'm very, very fortunate. And I think when I look back on my life as an immigrant, and however you want to put it, there's the word that keeps coming back is privileged, is that, yes, I may have been low income, but the community and the family support that I had just made it to where I was able to overcome that, and not even overcome it, not even feel it.
Ana's family was from Chihuahua, Mexico, the capital of Chihuahua State, about 270 miles south of El Paso. They came to Texas under the Bracero program, begun during World War II to bring Mexican agricultural workers into the United States. Ana's family chose to settle in Gale.
My mom grew up there. My mom actually graduated from high school in Gale, and she attended college here in the United States.
The Bracero program ultimately was terminated, in part because Mexican workers were often mistreated. But it institutionalized cross-border agricultural migration between the U.S. and Mexico.
So when my mom graduated, everybody kind of went back to Mexico. And so that's how I was born in Mexico. So after I was born, my mom moved me and my two older sisters to Chihuahua. And we lived there with my grandmother and aunts and uncles.
By that time, Ana's mom was a U.S. citizen.
When I was 5 years old, my mom said, okay, it's time to go to the United States, because I think things were starting to get pretty bad in Mexico. I think the kidnappings, the threats were starting to escalate. They're not as bad as they were not as bad as they are now, especially in Chihuahua, but they were starting to get to the point where she didn't feel safe being a single mother there.
Ana and one of her sisters got into the United States in the back seat of a car, driven by a family friend who had blonde hair. They crossed into the U.S. over the International Bridge between Juarez and El Paso.
I remember driving through the bridge, and she just said, pretend to be asleep when we get to the checkpoint. And that's what we did. Me and my middle sister pretended to be asleep, and the officer just waved us through. Now, I don't know if I know it was a man. I don't know if he waved us through because he was the friend that the family friend knew, or if it was just my mom's friend is white passing. So she's Mexican, but she has blonde hair, blue eyes, very light skin. So I don't know if it was a combination of her, how she looked, and then the fact that there's kids asleep in the car and you don't want to wake them up, or if she knew the officer, but they just waved us through. And so we passed the bridge in Juarez. So we ended up in El Paso.
Once in Gale, she found a truly miraculous place.
A lot of the success that I have in my life, and a lot of who I am, actually comes from growing up in that community. How privileged I am to have grown up in that community and to have that very positive experience. Specifically because my mom we're low income. My mom worked while she was in the United States, but she's a single mom. So it was her providing for me and my three sisters, and that was it. No child support, nothing. It was just her. But the school actually gives you a stipend if you have students and you live in one of their houses. The school is wealthy enough to where they own all of the houses in the area. So as a student, and because there's three of us, our rent was pretty low, and we would not have been able to live, pay rent, pay for food and everything if the school didn't provide that opportunity for us. And it wasn't just us. It wasn't even just low income kids. It was everybody. anybody who was a teacher or who had a kid in the school received, and they lived in a house that the school owned, paid less rent. I even though we were lower class, and in most people's eyes, it would be like, wow, you had a difficult life. I didn't feel it. And it's not just because of my mom. It's because of the community I grew up in. So in Gale, extracurricular activities are everything because it's a small town. But the school actually took care of all of that for everyone. It wasn't just the low-income kids. I felt like I was on an even playing field with everybody. And, if we had to go to a basketball game, the school provided a stipend. It was only $5, but for food, so that everybody had the same amount of money for food. If you needed uniforms, anything, the school provided it.
Most importantly, the school taught her English as a second language, ESL. Language, she says, is the foundation for feeling part of a community.
The fact that I had ESL training and grammar training from when I got there until I left means that I can speak to you without having to worry about how you're understanding me, because I don't have an accent. I don't have to worry about the tenses that I'm using or if I use the correct grammar. That instills a confidence that I think people don't realize, just being able to communicate clearly, to where I know that when I'm having this conversation with you, you're listening to my words, and I don't have to worry about, did they understand me correctly? Did I say that word correctly? Did I translate it correctly? So that's an example of how Gale, even to this day, created who I am as a person who speaks English is specifically based off of that. In a more general sense, the sense of community and the importance of community has really created my personality.
When Anna was in her early teens, her mom began the process of making her daughters U.S. citizens.
She had contacted two different attorneys, and one of them ghosted her, took her money and ghosted her, and then the other one took the money and never filed the paperwork. And so my mom got fed up, and she said, well, I'll do it myself. And it sounds great, and it is great. It's very empowering that this woman was able to apply for her own children, filling out the application. But it's also a reminder to me of how difficult immigrants have it who weren't educated in Gale, who didn't have a college degree, who didn't speak English, and who weren't aware of the bureaucracy and how it works in the United States, was able to prepare the paperwork. She filed it. It's called, the I-130 is what it's called. It was approved. And then after that, we had our interview in Mexico and Juarez for the green card. It's a two-step process, getting your green card. But I remember when we were going to Juarez, I was 13, 14 then, and I was old enough to where I knew what was going on, and I asked mom, so what happens if it doesn't get approved, if the green card doesn't get approved? And she said, well, we'll just go back to Mexico. So my mom did not want to further hinder us by having us be undocumented in the United States, if you can think about it this way. She wasn't willing to let us live undocumented if our one chance at a green card wasn't approved. And I don't know how she was strong enough to make that decision, because at that point we all had our lives here. She had been she works for a prison. So she was a correctional officer. She had been working there for years. But she was ready to move us back to Mexico if it wasn't approved, because she didn't want us to have that life. That's not a choice that all immigrants can make, but that's a choice that she was willing to make.
The sisters got their green cards and eventually were interviewed as part of the process in becoming U.S. citizens.
And I remember the interview. It was weird. There was a gentleman who was questioning me about the forms. And so he tried to trick me. He would ask me, what school did you go to? And I told him I went to Montwood High School, and it's 3 miles away from my house. It takes me about 10 minutes to get there. And then about half an hour later, he went, so how's Eastwood High School? What's the mascot? So he was trying to trick me to maybe find a lie or something in the application. And I don't know why he would do that, because now as an attorney, I've gone to citizenship interviews and I know what they're like. So that officer was trying to catch me in a lie. And the one thing that my mom always told me is you don't lie, especially on documents, immigration documents. And so she put the truth in all of our immigration documents. Like, how did you come to the United States? And she told them, well, somebody brought them over. But my mom, this is what happened. And so at the end, the officer approved it. I went and to the ceremony, and they gave me a little American flag, and I remember shaking it. Got my citizenship, and then my mom dropped me back off into English class, where my friends laughed at me. Not in a mean way, but they were kind of, you know, making a joke at me about the fact that I was a citizen now. And I'm like, okay, well, it's done. And I'm thankful to my mom to have done the entire process, because I didn't have anything to do with it. I didn't have to worry about it. And thankfully, she worked to where we got our citizenship.
Anna graduated from high school, got a bachelor's degree at the University of Texas at El Paso, and went on to get a law degree at Baylor. Now, at the age of 34, she lives immigration, explaining our laws to both Americans, who see thousands of asylum seekers at the border, and to the asylum seekers who want to be here.
The reason that people are at the border is because asylum law requires you to present yourself at the border to a Border Patrol officer and request asylum. That is the way the requirement is. And then from there, the officer will give you a credible fear interview. If they determine that you do have a credible fear of returning to your home country, they'll let you into the United States, maybe. Because in order to request asylum, like I said, you have to present yourself at the border. What they're not told is that they have a year from the first time they enter the United States to file their application. So I don't think that, I think they're falling into following the law as by accident, but I'm grateful that they are. So they're actually not breaking the law. This idea that the caravan or that's coming to the U.S.-Texas border, Mexico-Texas border is coming here to take over or whatever is bull, because they're following the law.
The law, by all accounts, Anna's included, needs to be rewritten because it is so complicated and because immigration has become so politicized. She does not see that happening in her lifetime. In that sense, she wishes the United States could be a little more like Gale, Texas.
You cannot hate anyone, because that is not only your neighbor, but if it's your neighbor and they have children, those children go to school with your children. Everything's face-to-face. That if you have a negative view or if you have a racist view or something like that, there's nothing to hide behind. It is face-to-face. And I found out that if you talk to someone face to face, it's not that they have to put a barrier on or, you know, muzzle on or something. It just, you're humanizing the other perspective instead of it being a random idea or tangent. It's an individual in front of you. And that's one of the reasons that I agreed to do this podcast, is because I also use myself and my story, the fact that I was an immigrant, and also the fact that I went to law school, and not just any law school, I went to Baylor Law School. I use that as kind of a way to put an immigrant who did successful and was successful because of the community that she was raised in front of you. So that way, the negative connotations that you have towards immigration or immigrants or undocumented immigrants kind of gets hit face to face.
You've been listening to When I Got Here, a production of Literacy Achieves in Dallas, Texas. I'm Dionne Kirby, CEO. We provide English literacy programs to hundreds of immigrant and refugee families from all over the world. We help them. We celebrate them. We invite you to tell us your immigrant stories at literacyachieves.org. Tune in next month for another episode of When I Got Here.